Good afternoon. It's good to see everyone who is willing and able to come back this afternoon to study another portion of God's Word. Let's start out this afternoon by saying if anybody feels like their time was not well spent here because of the lesson that's being presented, this is something that was suggested by Brother Elton. So you can talk to him about it after the service. But he presented something to me, a question or an idea. And I thought it was something that was appropriate to look at. Now, for the last several times that I spoke on Lord's Day afternoon, I did a chapter study on the book of Judges. Now, the book of Judges is one of the strangest books in the Bible. There's some fairly bizarre and strange things that happen within that book. But when we look at the Bible as a whole, we realize that everything in the Bible is given there for our learning and for our understanding. And sometimes we may wonder why certain things are there and why certain things happen the way that they did, but God had a purpose for all of it. That's why the Holy Spirit inspired it, and that's why we have it today. So we want to continue or add to our study of Judges by looking at another situation that we find in the Old Testament that's a little bit out of the norm, and we're going to begin with a little bit of insight and a little bit of backstory before we cover that incident, which really isn't enough in and of itself probably to flesh out into a lesson, but the circumstances surrounding it are important information for us to know. First, we realize and understand that God's ways are higher than our ways as the heavens are higher than the earth. God does things that we don't understand exactly. Sometimes we look at some of the animals and birds and sea life in the animal kingdom and we wonder, why did God ever create something that looked like that or functioned in that way? But we realize and accept and believe that God did create all things. Job chapter 9 and verse 10 tells us, which doeth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number, speaking of the power of God. In Isaiah chapter 55, beginning in verse 6, we read, seek ye the Lord while he may be found, call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it to bring forth and bud, that it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereunto I send it. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1, Solomon writes, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. We realize that one of the things that God gives us, a couple of things that God gives us that sometimes are to our detriment when we don't exercise them properly, and that's free will and curiosity. We realize that Eve had enough curiosity about the fruit that she was told not to eat that when the devil tempted her, she went ahead and ate it. And no doubt, in our human nature, we can kind of have that somewhat of an understanding of what that was like. If you put two people in a room and you put a bunch of objects in there and tell them they can do anything they want, but they can't touch a certain object, as soon as you leave the room, the first thing they're going to wonder about is, why can't I touch that object? And that's what curiosity does. It causes us to think about things, often things we have no business thinking about. But it is something that is part of our human nature, and it's something that we have to learn how to rule, just like the other parts of our spirit, mind, and body, like Paul wrote about when he talked about the idea of us being like athletes, and it's our Christian, our spirituality has to be exercised just like our body needs physical exercise. And so I've been thinking about doing this subject anyway, and I had a visit this past week from one of my customers who I say in kind of a loving way is a real dinosaur nerd. He knows a lot of stuff about dinosaurs, and he actually bought some dinosaur pieces over that he wanted me to make a mold of. But we were talking about evolution, and it's kind of funny that, you know, he's kind of science-based and I'm spiritually-based, obviously, but we both had some real problems with evolution and how it doesn't really seem to work out. And so We realize that there's a lot of things in the world that people are curious about in the world today. And certainly there are things in the Bible that cause us to wonder and really sometimes are head scratchers. But I think it's important for us to not to hide these things away, but to understand them, because when people try to approach you and try to dissect the Bible in a negative way and to try to expose it as something that's not true, it's important for us to be able to defend what the Bible says. And there's things in especially in the Old Testament that are difficult sometimes for us to understand and wrap our heads around. One of them for me being the idea that God would send the Jews into the Promised Land to kill everybody there. And there were a number of times when God had the children of Israel killed not only the soldiers they were fighting against, but women and children and even the livestock and the animals. And you know, we live in the Christian dispensation where God is love, and we're supposed to love one another. And sometimes that's hard for us to comprehend. And it's really difficult for people that are outside the church or have never studied the Bible to reconcile that. It's like, because they associate the things that were done in the Old Testament with things that they think Christians still believe in, like stoning people for sexual immorality and things of this nature. So these things are all important for us to understand so that we can not only increases our faith, but it can help other people that come to us with questions about the Bible to understand those things as well. So what we're going to talk about a little bit this morning, or this afternoon, I'm sorry, is a situation that happened to Saul, who was the first king that God appointed over Israel. And I want to go into just a little bit of a backstory and a reminder for those who, so we can really understand what was happening there. We realize that in the book of Exodus, we find that Moses was chosen by God to lead the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. And kind of along with what we're talking about here, we often wonder, Daryl mentioned this morning about the golden calf that the Jews had Aaron make after Moses went up into the mountain. Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt. There were 10 plagues, the miraculous happenings that occurred in order to convince Egypt not only to let the children of Israel go, they kicked them out and told them, take everything you want that we have and leave. And then they got out into the wilderness, and Moses went up into the mountain to receive the 10 commandments. And the Israelites lost their patience with waiting for Moses to come back, and they had Aaron build them a golden calf. Now, you got to think about this a minute. Moses went up into the mountain and was gone a certain number of days, and in less than 40 days, they lost their patience and had Aaron build a golden calf, because when Moses did come down, the calf was finished, and they were partying and worshiping this golden calf, and so they couldn't have had very much patience waiting for Moses to come back. But this is the kind of thing that happened to the Jews over and over again. They saw these miraculous things. Later, they would see God part the Red Sea and allow them to escape from the Egyptians through the sea over to the other side, where they were destined to head for the Promised Land. But because of their sin and their mistrust in Moses and in God, they were caused to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. So Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt and into the wilderness. Moses became old and was about to die, and Joshua became the leader, and Joshua was the one who led the children of Israel into the Promised Land. And before Joshua died, he gathered the children of Israel together, and he tried to get them to make a commitment to either give up on God and leave, or to embrace God and to do the things that God wanted them to do. And if you remember that famous speech that Joshua made, it ended with, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And the Jews did all right for a while, but then they had a time where they were like a rudderless ship, because they didn't have a leader. And if you read through the book of Judges, as we did, you will see that Israel was kind of like a fractured nation. It's like all the tribes were kind of independent of each other, and sometimes they were warring with other people, and sometimes they were warring amongst themselves, and they were constantly falling away from God, and God had to appoint a judge over them to correct them and get them to do the right thing. And eventually the Jews grew tired of this pattern also, of having these judges or prophets that would to try to get them to straighten up, or even the voice of God himself would correct them. And we now read in 1 Samuel chapter 10, in verse beginning of verse 17, "And Samuel called the people together unto the Lord to Mizpah, and said unto the children of Israel, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought up Israel out of Egypt, and delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of all kingdoms, and of them that oppressed you. And ye have this day rejected your God, who himself saved you out of all your adversaries and your tribulations. And ye have said unto him, Nay, but set a king over us." Throughout history, this is probably one of the ultimate cases of this idea of be careful what you hope for or wish for, you might get it. Because the Jews looked at the other nations that were around them. They all had kings, and they decided, instead of being the people that God wanted them to be, they decided, we want to be like everybody else. We want to have a king. And so God gave the Jews a king, and their first king was Saul. And we realize throughout the history of the Old Testament, we see that even the best of the best kings that Israel had were still men that were very flawed in the things that they did. And it shows forth that that leadership is a very important quality. And even sometimes we can't totally trust or depend on the people who put over us to lead. And that's why ultimately our first allegiance should be to God. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, we read about Saul's downfall. He did all right for a while as a king. But through the prophet Samuel, God had told him to go out and to smite the Amalekites. And by smite, God meant completely destroy that people, to kill the king and all the soldiers, and to go to continue on and to kill their women and children and their cattle. And for whatever reason, Saul, for the most part, carried that out, but he decided to spare their king instead of killing him, and the soldiers, instead of killing all their livestock, kept the best of the animals that they said they were going to use as a offering to God. And chapter 15 of 1 Samuel ends with God repenting that he had made Saul king. A few chapters later in 1 Saul, in chapter 17, after David slays the Philistine Goliath, and ends that war at that particular time between the Philistines and the Israelites, it becomes clear to Samuel that and the Jews that David would make a better king for them than Saul would. And so we see throughout several different books in the Old Testament these conflicts between Saul and David as they kind of skirmish back and forth over who is going to eventually be king. And when we come to chapter 28 of 1 Samuel, we find that the Philistines are once again preparing to go to battle against Israel. And because the king of the Philistines has been having a conversation and a relationship with David, he thinks David is going to side with him against Israel, when David is really just kind of using the Philistine king to his own end. But Saul is concerned because now he's going up against the Philistines again, and he doesn't feel like he can win. And so he tries to petition God, but God is not going to hear him because he is no longer the king that that God wanted him to be. I'd like now to read from 1 Samuel chapter 28, beginning of verse 1. "And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men. And David said to Achish, Surely thou shalt know that what thy servant can do. And Achish said to David, Therefore will I make thee keeper of mine head forever. Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. And the Philistines gathered themselves together," excuse me, "and came and pitched in Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gibeah. And when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart greatly trembled. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by the prophets." Now, it's mentioned here three different things that Saul was counting on for God to speak to him or to help him, and none of these things happened. The first was dreams. This is a person would pray for instruction and beg God that he would answer them by a significant dream. And we see in the Old Testament where God speaks to his people in dreams. Urim is a is something that Urim and Thurman, I believe it's called, or something that's kind of a mystery in the Old Testament. Everybody's not sure exactly what they are. Clark's commentary defines Urim as a kind of oracle answer given to the high priest when clothed with the ephod, on which were the Urim and the Thummim. How these communicated the answer is not well known. And then, of course, the prophets. God spoke to the prophets and guided his people through the prophets. Oftentimes, as you remember, Jesus talked about how the Jews had ignored and sometimes even beaten and killed the prophets because the prophets would tell them what God wanted them to know, and because it wasn't what they wanted to hear, they would revolt, and the prophets sometimes would pay the physical consequences of their unwillingness to serve God. But at this time, Samuel was dead, and if I remember correctly, I think it was Nathan who was the prophet that confronted David about Bathsheba, so he kind of came in and eventually took Samuel's place. But at this time, there wasn't really a prophet that is mentioned in the Bible that was governing over the things that were transpiring there. So all three of these avenues that had previously been available to Saul in finding out what God wanted him to do were now not available, because God had turned his back on Saul because Saul had not obeyed the way that he was supposed to. And so Saul had kicked out all these wizards or people that professed to have some kind of magical or supernatural power. He had kicked them all out of Egypt. And now he's we're going to find that he's getting desperate to find out what it is that is going to happen in this battle. So we'll continue reading in 1 Samuel chapter 28 with verse 7. Excuse me. Then said Saul unto his servant, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor. And Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, and he went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up, whom I shall name unto thee. And the woman said unto him, behold, thou knowest that Saul hath done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul sware to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, bring me up Samuel. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice, and the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. And the king said unto her, be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said unto Saul, I saw God's ascending out of the earth. And he said unto her, what form is he of? And she said, an old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, that he stooped with, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. So in desperation here, we see that Saul, because he cannot contact God, he's going to try to seek counsel of a woman that has a familiar spirit. Now, this is someone that we would call today a fortune teller or a medium. You see these people on TV who say they can talk to dead people's relatives, and they'll say you want to talk to somebody, and the person will blurt out some clue that tips the person off, and then they go into this whole spiel about how they're able to communicate with the dead, which we know is not a real thing. But apparently people at this day and time, just like some people unfortunately today, believe that these kind of things were real. We can read about various things in the Old Testament that that God told Moses that the children of Israel were not supposed to have anything to do with, including sorcery, enchantments, and astrology. And we see these things often come up in the Old Testament, astrology, especially in the book of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar, who was a great king and the leader of one of the most powerful nations that had ever, or empires that had ever been on the earth, had a whole group of magicians and people of these various nature that he kept around him that he thought had some kind of clue into the supernatural, and it would help him in his reigning as well. So this woman is afraid of what's going to happen to her, because Saul has already kind of chased all these people out of Israel, and this woman somehow was still around and people knew about her. And so he went to her to see if she could find out what it was that God expected for him to do. And so she calls on Samuel, and her reaction is kind of surprised because Samuel actually appears. And this always reminds me of I've seen in a couple of different movies or TV shows where somebody pretends to be, of course, this is a fictional thing, but they pretend to be one of these mediums or something. And then when a actual ghost confronts them, they freak out because it's like they're actually doing what they pretended to do the whole time. And so we realize that it wasn't this woman that had any power, but it's actually the power of God that allowed Samuel to appear and to speak to Saul at this time. And so, as we said, it's obvious from passages both in the Old and the New Testament that there were some supernatural things that went on. There were demons on the earth. Jesus and the apostles exorcised demons from people. We know that these were the fallen angels because they knew who Jesus was. When Jesus would come to a place and these demons were there, they would ask him, why have you come to bother us? You know, they knew who Jesus was, and Jesus often told them not that they weren't to tell anybody that they knew him, because people made that wrong association that Jesus had, that the power that Jesus had came from the devil and not from God. So he would tell the demons not to say his name or to act as if they recognized him. So we knew that some of these things took place, but this woman did not have this power. It was God that allowed this thing to transpire. So now we'll continue reading in 1 Samuel chapter 28, beginning in verse 15. And Samuel said to Saul, "Why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up?" And Saul answered, "I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me, and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I call thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do." Then said Samuel, "Wherefore then dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord has departed from thee and has become thine enemy? And the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me, for the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." Saul here now delivers this grim news to Saul, that because Saul has failed to serve God, because Saul thought his own way was better than the way that God told him that he wanted things done, now God has abandoned Saul, and he's left to his own resources and his own devices to try to win this battle, which Samuel tells him he's not going to win, that he and his sons are going to be killed. And Samuel says that they are going to be with him the next day. No doubt what Samuel means by this is he's going to be with them in hell, or as we know that particular meaning of hell is the place of the dead that's divided between torment and a paradise. And so we can assume that Samuel would probably be in paradise, but Saul and his sons most likely would end up in a torment. Jonathan was the son of Saul that was looked upon the most favorably, but we know that God is in charge of the judgment of, or Jesus will be in charge of, I'm sorry, of judgment of all people on Judgment Day. But Saul here is making it clear is making it clear to Saul that he's not going to survive this battle, and it's because of his disloyalty and his mistrust in the things that God told him that he wanted him to do. We'll finish reading the chapter beginning in verse 20 of 1 Samuel 28. Then Saul fell straightway all along the earth and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel, and there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. And a woman came unto Saul and saw that he was sore troubled, and said unto him, "Behold, thine handmaiden hath obeyed thy voice, and I have put my life in my hand, and have hearkened unto thy words, which thou speakest unto me. Now therefore, I pray thee, hearken thou also unto the voice of thine handmaid, and let me set a morsel of bread before thee, and eat, that thou mayest have strength when thou goest on thy way." But he refused, and said, "I will not eat." But his servants, together with the woman, compelled him, and he hearkened unto their voice. So he arose from the earth, and sat upon the bed, And the woman had a fat calf in the house, and she hasted and killed it, and took flour and kneaded it, and did bake unleavened bread therefore. And she brought it before Saul and before his servants, and they did eat. Then they arose and went away that night. So we see that the chapter ends with a woman here making a meal for Saul to strengthen him before he departs. He's going to need his strength because he's going into battle the next day, a battle that he's already been told that he's going to lose. And this, again, helps us to understand that there are things that we find in the Bible that can be somewhat confusing. They can be somewhat mysterious to us if we don't study them and understand them. As we mentioned before, this is a case, I feel, where this woman did not really have any kind of supernatural power. She was a fake or pretender because she was surprised when she was actually able to do the thing that Saul asked of her in bringing up the voice of Samuel from the dead. There are other cases in both the Old and the New Testament where, as we mentioned, there are things that happen that we don't feel happen any longer in the earth. We know in the days of the early church that Daryl spoke about this somewhat this morning as well, where the apostles and other disciples had various spiritual gifts, including healing, and one of the things they were able to do was to cast out demons. And we see in the world today where people still talk about demon possession and things of this nature. And the conclusion that I've come to, based on what I've read and everything, is that when the spiritual gifts went away, anything that required a spiritual gift to defeat it also would go away. And so there's people that have various different ideas about what kind of real influence that the devil and his demons have on us today. Obviously, we know that trials and tribulations and temptations come into our life, and we have to realize how to recognize them and then to battle against them so they don't affect us spiritually. What all this does, it kind of ties again back into what Daryl talked about this morning, is just about faith. We have to have faith that the Bible gives us all the information that we need to know the things that God would have us to do. It provides us with a history of God's people and how they encounter different things, some of them very basic, some of them as this a little bit on the more bizarre side. But again, if we have faith in God and put our faith and trust in Him, He will guide us through whatever situation that we're in, no matter how mundane or normal it seems or how unreal it may seem. God will always be there with us, and we know that we will prevail if we put our trust in God and do the things that He asks us to do. So hopefully this has been an interesting study, something that we can find other things when people question us. I encourage you, if you ever see something in the Bible that seems strange or different or you can't quite understand, reach out to somebody. Reach out to somebody else who's studied, been studying longer than you have, and don't let those kind of things confuse you, but get an understanding of them so they can help you, and if someone else ever asks you about it, then you'll have a way that you can talk to them. And I've found that people that have that are kind of dismissive about the Bible, when you show them that you know something about what it says and you can easily show them where their preconceived notions about it are not correct, you can gain some you can cause some curiosity within them, and that's one of the main things that's going to draw people to the truth. If they get curious enough about it that they actually pick up the Bible and start reading it for themselves, and if they have somebody they can go to that help them understand it and accept the things that it teaches, you'll be that much more able to hopefully convince someone else to come to the truth. So I thank you for your attention this morning. We never want to end a lesson or a service without offering the invitation to those who aren't members of the church to come in to be baptized, or those who require the services of the church to come forward while we stand and sing the invitation song.